Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Where would you want to go to get away from it all? Maybe a tropical island? You know, I've always wanted to go to Kauai in Hawaii, lush and green, as is paradise there. If you're sponsoring a Catholic conference in Kauai and you'd like a speaker, let me know. Maybe we could work something out. But in today's Free For All Friday, we're going to talk about five islands you probably don't want to set foot on for various reasons. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're going to talk about five islands you do not want to visit. They're either scary, or they're dangerous, or they're both, or unpleasant things. You may have heard of some of these islands, but I bet you've, unless you enjoy reading about obscure places around the world like I do, it's possible you've never heard of any of these islands. So let us jump right into them. Take out your notepad if you want to write these down so you don't accidentally book a vacation to a place you don't want to visit, and if you do go there, you may not come back. And that is definitely the case with the first island on our list. And that would be Isla de Quemada Grande, which is Spanish for guy who cannot pronounce things in Spanish. I took 3 years of high school Spanish. You know, I can talk in the present tense like a five-year-old. So if you have an issue that involves going to the library, cleaning your room, finding the red house, man, I can get all that stuff done for you. Anything else though is Spanish, I absolutely cannot do. No puedo. No si se puedo. No, I cannot do that. Isla de Quemada Grande is known as Snake Island. It is an island off the coast of Brazil in the Atlantic Ocean. It is administered as part of the municipality of Itenheim, although, well, I should say, I don't think this is actually Spanish. In Brazil, I think they speak Portuguese. Portuguese. The island is small in size, only 43 hectares, aka about 100 acres. So it's a small island, about 100 acres, is bare rock, rainforest. But here's the trick on Snake Island. Why do they call it Snake Island? The island is the only natural home of the critically endangered and highly venomous Bothrops insularis, the golden lancehead pit viper. So the snakes became trapped on the island thousands of years ago following the end of the last ice age when rising ocean levels disconnected the island from the mainland. And the ensuing evolutionary pressure allowed the snakes to adapt to their new environment. And you might be thinking, well, Trent, what's the big deal? Okay, it's got snakes. You know, can it be that bad? There's a lot of rainforest you go and visit. They got snakes in them too. You just got to watch where you step. What's the big deal? And that's true. Like, I live here in Texas and there are venomous snakes you have to keep an eye out for. But the thing is, there's not a lot of them. We got the rattlesnake, the copperhead, the cottonmouth, and the coral snake. All right. But I've seen some snakes in the rivers nearby here. I don't know. Those could be cottonmouths or water moccasins. You just keep an eye out. Here's the problem, though. On Snake Island off the coast of Brazil, there are estimates that there's, in parts of the island, there is one snake for every 10 square feet. And you see this, you look at videos online, look up Snake Island on YouTube, and you'll show videos when people go to the island. There is literally a snake everywhere you step. There is a snake nearby. It is covered in them. I'm surprised there's that many snakes on there. They don't have a natural predator because of the evolutionary pressure is getting stuck on the island. There's no natural predator for them. The only thing that would limit their size would be resources like food. So they tend to prey on unsuspecting birds that fly the island and, you know, never want to return. So it was previously thought there was 430,000 snakes, but that's been rounded down to about 2 to 4,000 concentrated in the rainforest area of the island. And a 2015 documentary by the Discovery Channel puts the number at about 2 to 4,000. And so they're not over the island uniformly. If you go to the rocky outcrops, I don't think there's that many there. You go to the rainforest there everywhere. But still, in a lot of the island, it's not uncommon. You just walk a few feet, you're going to come across these things. That's why, like many of the islands on this list, it's closed to the general public. You are not allowed to go there. The Brazilian government does not allow people to go there, both for the safety of the snakes, because they're endangered, and for the safety of the doofuses that might go there and get their picture with a pit viper. Like, I went to Snake Island. All I got was this lousy t-shirt and all these snake bites. Researchers are allowed to go to study the island, things like that, but otherwise it is closed to the public. Our next island is also closed to the public, because there are not things that will kill you, like on Snake Island. There are people who will kill you at this island if you go there. So you're not allowed to go there. And that island is North Sentinel Island. North Sentinel Island. I think I talked about this in the podcast a few years ago, and I'll explain why in a second. But North Sentinel Island is part of the Andaman Islands, the Indian archipelago in the Bay of Bengal, which also includes South Sentinel Island. Shocker there. It is home to the Sentinelese, an indigenous people in voluntary isolation who have defended, often by force, their protected isolation from the outside world. The Andaman and Nicobar Islands Protection of Aboriginal Tribes Act of 1956 prohibits travel to the island or approach closer than 5 nautical miles. It's designed to prevent the tribal community from acquiring foreign diseases to which they have no immunity. And it keeps you safe because the North Sentinelese people really value their privacy a lot. They want to live disconnected from the Western world. They're one of the few lost tribes, uncontacted peoples. I mean, people have contacted them and haven't done very well. So some local fishermen fell asleep on their boat. The boat drifted to North Sentinel Island, and then the islanders killed them in the boat. That, of course, was an accident. That's why a lot of fishermen stay away from North Sentinel Island. One individual, I want to say his name was John Chow. My notes here is just Chow is the last name. I want to say it was John Chow. You know what? I can look that up now. The gentleman's name, did I get it right? Yes, John Allen Cho. I want to say it was probably Cho, C-H-A-U. John Allen Cho, an American evangelical Christian missionary who went to North Sentinel Island voluntarily to attempt to evangelize the North Sentinelese. So, and this is, he didn't do it on a lark. Like, he really did prepare for this. He quarantined himself. He vaccinated, did everything to make sure that he wasn't sick or carrying certain diseases. He learned the local language. He learned the customs. He brought medical equipment, waterproof Bibles. He called it Satan's last stronghold on earth, a place people, they don't know who Jesus is. He wrote in his diary, "Lord, is this island Satan's last stronghold where none have heard or even had the chance to hear your name? The eternal lives of this tribe is at hand." There's something interesting that he wrote in his diary. "I think it's worthwhile to declare Jesus to these people. Please do not be angry at them or at God if I get killed. Don't retrieve my body." This is back in 2018. He went to the island, got onto the shore, and attempted to communicate, but was greeted with laughter and hostile responses. One kid even shot an arrow through his waterproof Bible. He left, and then he went back one more time, and then fishermen saw them dragging his body around on the shore. And so people, I talked about this in the podcast a while ago, because people said that, oh, he got what was coming to him, he shouldn't do that to these people. Well, no, sharing the good news of Jesus Christ is a good thing. Everybody needs that. So he's not doing anything wrong. We live in a secular culture that thinks that will tolerate anything except intolerance. And of course, he's not enslaving people. He's going to share Jesus with them. Because we live in a culture that says every culture is equally valuable, whether you believe in Jesus or you believe in indigenous gods, whatever it may be. Every culture is valuable, and you shouldn't try to change somebody's culture by, you know, getting them to convert to a different religion. So you have people who hold to this cultural relativism, very common among anthropologists. But then you have a problem. If you say every culture is equal, then that means, let's say I have a very intolerant culture. I believe we should go and convert the whole world. Are you going to say my culture is wrong? It's worse than your socially, culturally relative anthropological culture at your secular liberal university. So if you say my culture, you either have to say my culture is wrong, which means you're not treating us all equally, or if you treat everybody equally, you can't say what Cho did was wrong, can't say what I would do to convert people would be wrong. Relativism, as Francis Beckwith and Greg Kokel wrote in a book many years ago, "Feet Firmly Planted in Midair" was the subtitle of their critique of relativism. That book, by the way, Beckwith and Kokel, their book on relativism, co-authored, that was back when Beckwith, Frank, as his friends would call him, was Protestant. He was the head of the Evangelical Theological Society. He later converted to Catholicism. I remember listening to a podcast interview he did with Greg, because they had worked together for a long time. It's a tad tense, I will say. But they're both good people. I appreciate a lot of Greg's pro-life work. That'd be a subject, you know, talk about another time. We got more islands to talk about. Lots of islands. Here's number 3. The Island of Dolls. Well, that sounds fun, right? What could be bad about that one? The Island of Dolls, originally owned by Don Julia and Santana Barrera, is full of dolls hanging from trees and buildings covered with cobwebs and insects. The place was named in the 1950s when the dolls started randomly appearing on the island. So this is an island near Mexico City. And so this guy originally owned it, Don Julian Santana Barrera. He started putting up all these dolls everywhere, and they've, you know, they fade over time, lose their hair, and it's so creepy. If you don't want to sleep well tonight, look up the Island of Dolls, and it shows all these creepy baby dolls. Are creepy in general. I hate them. I'm glad I have three boys. We have like one baby doll that has been left at our house, and baby dolls just turn creepy. They do, right? I'm talking about the big baby doll toys. Eventually, like, remember in Toy Story 3, they have the baby doll toy, and it's used as the enforcer in the prison at Sunnyside Daycare or whatever it was called. Sunnyside, I want to say it was that. And they're creepy because they end up losing their onesie and they get dirty and faded, and one of the eyes is only always halfway open. And baby dolls just get creepy over time. And so this island, Isla de las Muñecas, is covered in them. And legend says a young girl drowned entangled among the lilies of the canal. Her body was found on the banks there. And Santana claimed to have heard the girl crying out, "I want my doll." He found a doll there. He claimed he heard the ghost of the girl saying, "I want my doll." Terrified, he hung up the doll he found near the girl's body. After the event, every time he went outside, he claims to have found a new doll hanging from one of the trees. So he claims that he didn't put the dolls up. The ghost of the girl did, or something creepy. And later, he died on the island, apparently near the same spot where the girl drowned. Many believe his death was caused by the girl's spirit, which haunts the island. That's probably a Mysterious World episode just waiting right there. So if you want to go to, but I think people can still go to the island. You can see like where he lived and some of the, a little museum dedicated to this. No, thank you. Not on my list of sites in Mexico City. I will pass on the Island of Dolls. Next one, we'll go over to Japan, this is in Japan, southeast of Tokyo, Miyakijima, Miyake Island. This one's not creepy, it's just more dangerous, though of all the islands on the list, this one's probably the least dangerous, at least for now. It is a volcanic island in the Izu Archipelago in the Philippine Sea, about 100 miles southeast of Tokyo. It's an active volcanic island. So on July 14, 2000, Mount Oyama, the volcano on the island, began a series of eruptions. The island was completely evacuated. After a four-year period of volcanic emissions, residents were allowed to return permanently in February of 2005. But after the eruption, there has been a constant flow of sulfur dioxide gas coming from the mountain. Residents of the island were once required to carry gas masks with them at all times, but the masks have not been needed for years. The gas emissions are monitored to predict volcanic activity. So that used to be called Gas Mask Island. So this is one more, it's a bit, you know, safer to go to now. You don't have to carry a gas mask around everywhere you go on the island, but you do want to be careful. It's still a volcano. Final one on the list is Ramri Island in Myanmar, aka Burma. Ramri Island is the site of what was considered one of the greatest animal massacres in history, and that would be the Ramri Crocodile Massacre. This took place during the Battle of Ramri Island from January 14th to February 22nd, 1945, part of World War II, part of the offensive on the Southern Front of the Burma Campaign by the 15th Indian Corps. Japanese soldiers were being flanked. They fled the island trying to get across it, tried to swim across the channel and get to another side. And it's been claimed that like hundreds of soldiers or even like 500 Japanese soldiers were eaten by crocodiles. Now, there are a lot of saltwater crocodiles around here, alligators or crocodiles. They're big. They can be 23 feet long. They are scary animals for a human being to go up against. So that is dangerous and scary. I don't want to be around them at all. They make the gators in Florida look like little chumps, even though those are scary as well. But saltwater crocodile, is it crocodile or alligator? I want to say it's an alligator. Largest alligator. It's a saltwater alligator. Yeah, it's like the largest one ever caught is the Marsh Island alligator, 19 feet, 2,000 pounds. Oh, man. Oh, goodness. So, though, I think the story has been debunked. Like, if there really were, like, that many crocodiles, how did they all survive living there before there were all these Japanese troops? That's a nice meal, but there's not enough food to sustain that many crocodiles. Probably what happened is a lot of the soldiers that fled into the island and tried to escape died from exposure, disease. They drowned swimming across the way. And their bodies were later consumed by some of the alligators there, and some of the Allied soldiers saw this, and that's where the myth came to be. But even still, all the alligators, crocodiles there, and just the battle and everything that happened, Ramri Island, still pretty low on my list of places to visit. Last one is a bonus. I did five I don't want to visit. Here's one I kind of want to visit, but not really. I think I would like it for maybe, like, I don't know, 5 minutes, and then say, why did I come here? Did I really need to come here? But if you want to get away from it all, you should go to this island. You should go to Desolation Island. Desolation Island, a.k.a. are the Kerguelen Islands. So the Kerguelen Islands are, look at a globe, right? Spin the globe. Try to find the most out-of-the-way place you can on the globe. Go to the Indian Ocean, all right? And in the middle of the southern Indian Ocean, like equidistant from Africa, Australia, and Antarctica, you've got these little islands there in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it's about as far as we can get from almost anywhere. Those would be the Kerguelen Islands. They're called the Islands of Desolation. They're cold, they're windy, hardly anything there. Except Notre Dame des Vents, French for Our Lady of the Winds. It is a Catholic church located in Port-au-François, the capital settlement of the Kerguelen Islands. The chapel was built in the 1950s out of concrete. Small rectangular stained glass adorn the base of the ceilings. Its proportions are based on the golden ratio, and a few celebrations are held throughout the year. It is the southernmost French Catholic place of worship. So I don't know, that'd be kind of cool. Just, I'm just in the middle of nowhere, and there's just this church that's just so far away from the rest of the world. And yet even here, the Catholic faith is lived out at least a few times a year. So that's cool, right? Catholic, universal. I like it. All right, thank you guys so much. Five islands you don't want to visit, and an honorable mention of a neat place to visit, but yeah, you probably wouldn't. You never know. If you've been to the Kerguelen Islands, leave a comment, though, at our Patreon. If you are a patron who has been to the Kerguelen Islands, leave a comment. And even if you're a patron who hasn't been there, leave a comment at our page at trendhornpodcast.com. Definitely consider supporting us there, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.